Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
And I'm Sean.
And this is the Commander's Brew.
This week, Vela the Nightclad. Oh, welcome, everybody. Something is different.
What?
And to my left is not Andy Hull. It is our good friend Scott. He's in our meta.
Hey, everybody.
You will remember him from the guest month with his Jorkadeen artifact deck. It's a brutal deck. It's brutal good. I use the word just to mean, like, if you're against it, it feels brutal.
Oh, good. Like, that's what I want.
And if you're piloting it, I assume it feels wicked.
Well, when it works.
Yeah, right?
You know, no deck always works.
Yeah, yeah. But welcome. So Andy is on his honeymoon. He's celebrating love and all those things. So,
congratulations to Andy and Sarah.
He's currently in Earth's version of Theros plane. They're in Greece right now. Try not to get monstrous.
Yeah, I saw some good pictures. They look like they're having a blast.
Having a blast. They were in London before that. What magic cards are from London? Most of the rogues.
Yeah. Innistrad-y.
Yeah, Innistrad seems pretty European.
Yeah.
But who are we brewing about this week? Let's see who we are brewing about. Vela the Nightclad. She is 4 blue black for a legendary creature human wizard, 4/4 with Intimidate. Other creatures you control have Intimidate. And whenever Vela the Nightclad or another creature you control leaves the battlefield, each opponent loses one life. Cool.
That's
so
great.
As you know, we always do two decks on a budget. I'll do one take, and this week our fantastic guest will do one take. On that budget is $50. We'll make sure it comes in under $50. No card over $5, unless it's like super huge, like it's got to be in there. And the two takes we split it on, it's pretty obvious. It's kind of in there on the text of the card. So other creatures you control have Intimidate, meaning they don't get blocked easy. That's your take.
That's what I'm doing, yep. And you got the second part.
Yeah, whenever this or another creature leaves the battlefield, each opponent loses one life. So pretty cool. I don't know why they just... Because it says Intimidate, and then it says other creatures you control have Intimidate. Why not just say creatures you control have Intimidate?
I think there's a reason for that. I don't really know what it is. I'm going to guess and say that it is more clear this way.
Because
yeah. I've seen this before. On a lot of the lords, they have this. Where they say, okay, I have Intimidate or Trample or whatever, and so do all of the other things. But it is individual. Like that Vampire Lord from the original Innistrad, I think. Or maybe it was Dark Ascension or something.
I don't know it.
Yeah, well, anyway, I've seen the templating before. I'm sure there's a reason. Everything gets Intimidate.
Everything gets Intimidate. It's great. And so you're playing blue and black. So Intimidate, for those of you who don't know, just means you can only be blocked by artifacts or cards that are the same color as the thing that's attacking. So for us, black or blue creatures, depending. Like if you attack with a black creature, it's no good to attack with a blue creature, right? Right. So yeah. So, right. So, like, you'll be able to see these decks on tappedout.net/users/commandersbrew. It's going to be cool to see what Scott come up with. Yeah. And, you know, this podcast is brought to you by the Wizards Tower, wizardtower.com. And let's hear an ad from them now. Hi, everybody. I'm in the middle of a Commander game, and I just cast Coax from the Blind Eternities. You know that spell that lets me search up an any Eldrazi creature from my collection, not in my deck? Well, I want to get a Kozilek Butcher of Truth, but I don't have one. So I'm going to order one from the Wizard's Tower, wizardtower.com. And I know it's more than $15, so I'm going to get my single shipped free here in Canada or in the US for a $10 or more order. And guess what? I'm going to use coupon code TOWEROFBREWS to get an extra 5% off. And I know they're going to give me 3% kickback towards my next order. What a great deal! I mean, my friends are going to have to wait a really long time for this to resolve. You know, a few days, but they ship pretty quickly, so not that long at all. All right, just hang on, guys. I'll get you more chips.
Cool ad!
Thank you, thank you, thank you very much. That's a reaction from just hearing it now. Yeah. So, yeah, that's that. That's a bit of business out of the way. Yeah. Ooh, this is so Butler is in our meta. You play or you Scott. You go by Scott now. I'm used to calling you. Yeah. I'm used to calling you by your last name.
Everybody is, you know, in a professional setting. Some people call me Scott a little bit more often, I would say. But
and this is a very professional setting, so I'm going to use the Mr. Scott for the
Mr. Sir, I believe would
Sir,
be even better.
Sir Scott. Yes,
you have been knighted.
We do have a Patreon. So you can go to patreon.com/commandersbrew. But let's close the suitcase on business and open the suitcase full of commander decks. How's
let's
that sound?
Let's get brewing.
Let's get brewing. What do we brew? We brew Veil of the Nightclad. We know this. So let's talk about what these decks are going to do. So we hinted at it before. So my deck is going to focus on whenever a creature leaves the battlefield, each opponent loses one life. It says leaves the battlefield. It doesn't have to go to the graveyard. It can get exiled. It can get flickered. Whatever happens to it, if it was there and then it's not, everybody losing a life. So I'm going to do a lot of that. So I'm going to be able to sacrifice things. I'm just going to really take advantage of that.
Yeah, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to take advantage of the Intimidate clause there and just try and sneak through as much combat damage as I can. Not necessarily just for the damage, but for extra profit, drawing cards, doing fun stuff, getting a whole bunch of triggers going off of that.
Oh, we love triggers.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and so like we brewed these very linearly, sort of like this, sort of like a half and half here. If you want to build these decks yourselves, you're probably going to take the parts of each half that you like the best and just squish them together. But we're going deep on each half. So let's break down some individual categories. I want to talk about some creatures that won't stay dead, right? We want creatures that keep coming back for more and more advantage. One of the best of this is a Reassembling Skeleton. This guy's a classic. One in a black for a Skeleton Warrior. It's only 1/1, but you can pay one in a black and return Reassembling Skeleton from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. I can do that at instant speed, so if I need a blocker, I just do it at the end of the last person's end step. And then I got him on my turn to block, and then I'll just bring him back when necessary. But the fact that he comes back himself, he's better than a token because a lot of cards watch for non-token creatures going to the graveyard, and this is will always be a non-token creature, so you can get that bonus over and over. It's great. You just can't keep him dead. He won't stay
plus
dead.
Plus, he doesn't disappear, right? When he changes zones, you know, you can still get him back.
Yeah, like
even if he didn't have his ability there. He's just a creature.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's just a creature. Yeah, for sure. Not a token. Tokens suck.
hey.
They don't suck. They don't suck.
We love tokens, all right?
We love you tokens. I do run a lot of tokens in this, but these guys are the ones that are better than tokens. I want to highlight Puppeteer Cleek. 3, black, fairy wizard, flying, 3/2. I'm going to skip ahead to the end of the card and tell you that he has Persist. So again, when this guy dies, when it goes to the graveyard, he comes back with a -1/-1 counter on him, and as long as he doesn't have -1/-1 counters, he'll come back again, right? So I don't have a way to manipulate counters, so he's only going to come back the one time, but you get him twice. That's 2 times he's going to leave the battlefield. And not only that, when Puppeteer Cleek comes into play, put target creature card in an opponent's graveyard into play under your control. It has haste. At the end of your turn, exile it. That's another creature he brings to the table who's going to leave. That's another point for everybody. Not to mention whatever the creature I grab does as well. I'm going to grab a big scary thing twice. Persist. Puppeteer Cleek is great. Let me talk about Singer Nosferatu. What is this card? I never heard of it before. It's a vampire. It's 4/4 for 3 black, 5 converted mana cost. Got flying, which is good. But here's why I like it. It's got a bit of a Reassembling Skeleton flair to it. 1 in a black, exile Singer Nosferatu, put a 1/2 black bat creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Cool. There's your token. So I got 1 point from Singer Nosferatu leaving the battlefield. But this bat token also has 1 in a black, sacrifice this creature, return an exiled card named Singer Nosferatu to the battlefield under its owner's control. So they just flip, like this guy. So it's
back
kind of
forth.
Like, yeah, it's like a little bit of a transform thing going on. Like, right?
It's pretty good for 2 mana.
Yeah, right? So like, I can just keep going back and forth. So at the end of your turn, if I've got 8 mana up, I'll just swap them back and forth 4 times. That's 4 points.
And it's a bat, right? Yeah, so it has flying.
Yeah.
So you can pretty much block anything.
Well, sure.
Maybe not the things that I'm throwing at you.
No. You're right. Yeah, and I can do it in response to blocks. Yeah, this guy's great. This guy's a great guy. All right, let's head over to the other Vela side and see what's going on in that one.
All right. Well, the number one name of the game for us is evasion. We've got to sneak him through. We got the Vela's ability, Intimidate, and give everybody else Intimidate. We got a couple other ways of doing that. Deep Channel Mentor.
Oh, yeah. I got to open the deck list here. I can only have one open at a time.
Oh, that's all right. I got it right here.
Oh, yeah.
Deep Channel Mentor. It's a 6 drop, but it just says blue creatures you control can't be blocked. And we got a lot of blue creatures, and now they can't be blocked. So it's just whatever you got sitting around. If it was able to be blocked before, no longer. Not that that's really a problem, but this thing really shuts the door on that. We've got Deep Fathom Skulker, which is another 6 drop. It has whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card, which is great for what we're doing. And for 3 and a colorless, a target creature can't be blocked this turn. So another backup there at the high end. We've also got a classic Whisper Silk Cloak.
Ooh.
And a couple others, artifacts to sneak in damage. Just a lot of things just get your guys in case you can't otherwise through your commander or just natively. There's a bunch of guys that have native evasion that are really good. Flying, horsemanship, yeah. Shadow.
Yeah.
What
else?
Other ones? Fear. Fear's on there.
Yeah, fear. And then just the natural intimidate. Like, if you're playing someone who's just not playing blue or black, your whole team has unblockable anyway.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now, blue is a pretty common color.
Yeah, but there's not always a ton of creatures that go along with it.
That's true.
Like, sometimes there's, like, some giant, like,
squids. Oh, we've also got some
stuff.
Island Walk, so that covers the blue mages.
Man,
we got our bases covered on the evasion.
We got
but
our
it
bases
is important.
Covered.
It is the meat and potatoes of the deck.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're focusing on combat damage, let's do that. Cool. So let's go back to the other Vela. Let's go back to Vela's Everyone Goes ability. So here's when creatures die, I want them to die for value. Right, I want to get something whenever a non-token creature goes to the graveyard. How about Pawn of Ulamog? 1, black, 2/2, Vampire Shaman. Whenever Pawn of Ulamog or another non-token creature you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may put a 0/1 colorless Eldrazi spawn creature token onto the battlefield. It has sacrifice this creature, add 1 colorless to your mana pool. Crazy. And he's got a twin that was made in Battle for Zendikar called Sifter of Skulls. 3 and a black for a 4/3 Eldrazi with Devoid. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a 1/1 colorless Eldrazi Scion creature token onto the battlefield. It has sacrifice this creature, add colorless to your mana pool. So the Scions are 0/1s and the spawns are 1/1s. But the key to both of these guys is they're watching for non-token creatures go away. I will remind you of Puppeteer Cleek, right? I cast him. I get some out of your graveyard. I sack both of them. That's 2 non-token cards that have left, so I got 2 spawns. Cool. Puppeteer Cleek comes back. I get another thing from your graveyard. I sack both of them. That's 2 more that have left. I get 2 more spawns. I can sack all those spawns for mana, but that's a total of 8 creatures that I've sacked. That's 8 points.
To everybody.
I love Vela. Vela's amazing. So then what about, I'm also going to talk about Grim Haruspex from the Dragons of Tarkir. Cons of Tarkir. 2 and a black for a human wizard, 3/2 with morph, although I don't imagine we'll ever cast him and unmorph him. But it says whenever another non-token creature you control dies, draw a card. There you go. So while that's all happening, in that interaction that I described, 4 of the sacrifices were non-token creatures, so I've drawn 4 cards off of that, too. Boom. Let's keep it rolling. Not only do I have that, I have Smothering Abomination. Smothering Abomination is a little bit demanding of us.
Mothering Abomination?
Mothering Abomination. Nice one. That's a nice one. Two black for a flying 4/3. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature. Whenever you sacrifice a creature, draw a card. So we do have to have a bit of sacrifice fodder around, but that just means more card draw. So, like, yeah, man, you can draw a lot of cards off of this.
Yeah. You're just be drawing cards, doing damage to everybody. You're not going to make any friends. You're going to make a lot of enemies with this deck.
Good. Yeah. Good. Vila don't like people.
Yeah. I think that's something that both of our decks actually do well. Is well the right word here? I don't know. But it angers everybody else. You know, like, yeah, that's going to... People don't like getting drained for 8 and having you draw a million cards.
It's true.
But they do it in different ways. Because you're doing it to everybody. I'm just doing it to one specific person over and over again.
Right. So I feel like you get to control... Like, so if the table agrees that, like, player 3 is the one to hate on, then you can just be like, all right, guys, yeah, I'll just unblock my way into him. No. And then everyone's like, oh, yeah, good job, Scott. Yeah, thanks for doing that.
Well, you need them on your side, though. Like, because otherwise you're just making one real strong enemy. Like... Some of the guys in our meta will just turn around and be like, okay, well, I'm just coming at you for the next 4 games for sure.
Yeah. Yes, we do that. We will hold, you know.
You don't do it so much.
Over game grudge. I try not to. I try to make it a policy to, like, put other games behind me because I do think that there's a lot of fun in, like, lying. Like, I think, like, it can be really fun to, like, earn trust and break trust. But I realize that, like, if you do that a couple of times, then no one will ever trust you in the future. So, like, at what point is it ever worth breaking a promise?
I mean, if you're going to win that turn, probably.
No, but so what? You win that game, but no one will trust you ever again in Commander.
So, I mean, like, people might profess to not trust you ever again, but game's got to end sometime. And I think everybody understands that. Well, all right. Not everybody understands that. Most people understand that.
Yeah.
Most.
I don't know, man.
I understand.
Anyway.
It's okay. You can stab me in the back, but you better win. Because I don't want to sit there for 20 minutes while you try and figure out how to win after stabbing me in the back.
Well, that's
going to make me very upset.
That's why I like playing with you, because, like, we'll make deals a lot. And, like, I feel like you're a man of honor. That, like,
good.
Whatever you say is, like if you say, like, yep, we got a partnership, then that's true. And if you ever need to break it, you'll just be like, hey, I'm breaking our partnership. And then it's like, okay, yeah, there's no messing around with you. Like, we just know what you're thinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't weasel around. Otherwise, your word is not worth anything, even within the context of the same game that you're playing.
Yeah.
It's pointless thing to... you're throwing away value there. Your word has value.
So... in some cases, I feel like it would be cool to play with strangers so you can lie all day to them. But I feel like strangers decks...
Everybody don't trust Sean.
I feel like strangers decks won't be that fun, though. They're going to be, like, super, like, tuned and grindy and all that stuff.
Well, it depends on the stranger. You know, we're strangers to people. All of our decks aren't super tuned. I have higherly tuned decks and lowerly tuned decks. So it's, you know... Don't trust Sean, everybody.
No, not true. Don't trust Butler for saying that. That he's obviously lying. Where were we?
Yeah, we were talking.
We're going
about...
back to your Vela for quick value stuff.
Oh yeah, so this is the quick off the gate. What you want to do? You want to get in there and you want to do small amounts of damage to get a few little triggers to happen. Good example, Thad Idel. Everybody knows this card, I'm sure. What does it do? You do damage and you look through your opponent's library for an artifact card.
Yeah.
And you can play that until the end of the turn.
Yeah, yep. I think she's 1 blue-blue.
Yep.
She's got Island Walk and she's 2/2. And yeah, as long as she does combat damage, you get to search their whole library for an artifact card, exile it, and then you just get to play that artifact.
Yeah, so, you know, search their library for a Soul Ring.
Yeah.
Put that out. And,
yeah.
And then if she sticks around for another turn, I don't know, figure something else out. Maybe a Gilded Lotus or something at that point.
Sure, or get everybody's
Mana
Soul
Rocks
Ring.
Are my favorite to get. Unless you have an artifact-related deck or there's an artifact-related deck out there, then you can get something really good like Inkwell Leviathan or something like
that. Ooh, I keep forgetting that guy's an artifact.
Yeah, right?
Man.
I mean, you got to be able to pay for it. But presumably at this point, you have a Gilded Lotus and a Soul Ring, which will help.
Yeah, a couple of Soul Rings.
Yeah, maybe a couple of Soul Rings. a couple of things you want to do is, you know, just get some card draw going. I mean, Thought Adele's kind of like a card draw, but there's a bunch of things. Jesse and Thief, Scroll Thief, Marchesa's Infiltrator, I think, that just draw your card when you do damage.
Thief.
Yeah, you just got to get those cards. And then the last thing, Explorer's Scope and a couple other cards like that to get that mana going. You know, Explorer's Scope is a cheap card. Explorer's Scope. Let me pull that one up here. It costs one mana, one generic mana. It's an artifact. Whenever equipped creature attacks, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you may put it onto the battlefield tapped, and it equips for one. So, you know, turn one or two, you just throw it out there. Turn two or three, when you've got a cheap creature, throw it on, it attacks, boom. Hopefully you got another land. If not, well, I mean, that's not plan A, but it's going to stick around there, and it's going to keep getting you new lands. And it does more work in this deck than I thought it would have.
Yeah.
Because I tried this out a while ago in just a random deck, and it just did nothing.
Sure.
But when you're constantly attacking with something, you know.
Right.
Because most EDH decks don't want to do that. You don't want to anger your opponents, right?
Yeah.
This deck, you kind of have to anger your opponents. There's no way. You pick one and try and make an ally out of somebody else.
Well, the Explorer's Scope, you know, you put that on a Scroll Thief, let's say. So now... I have made the argument successfully that it's like, well, I just want the trigger for Explorer Scope. So do you mind if I attack you for one? And then Someone's going to be like, yeah, okay. So then you're like, hee-hee-hee. And then you like do your Explorer Scope. You get your card draw off of it. And it's like, yeah, you did 1 point of damage to me, but that's okay. Because, you know, I needed my Explorer. It was only because of my Explorer Scope trigger.
Well, also the Scroll Thief.
Yeah, right. That's all. It's nothing personal.
Two triggers. I mean, I gotta text somebody.
Yeah, I gotta.
You're the highest life.
I gotta put some triggers on the table. Gotta feed my family with those triggers.
And later, this card actually does work too. It just makes sure that you don't draw lands when you want to be drawn.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I guess like, what happens if you just look at it, right?
Yeah, look at it. So
yeah, so if it's not a land, you know what's coming up next. And, you know, I guess so does everyone else.
No.
You just look at it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So you're not giving anything away. Although, you know, there's not a whole lot of secrets in this deck. I'm going to want things that attack you.
Yeah, right.
Do damage to you.
Nice.
So that I can get my combat damage trigger.
Explorer Scope. I never ran with that yet. I got to try that sometime. I like it. Okay, so I gave tokens a hard time before, but when you want as many creatures as possible to leave the battlefield, you got to talk tokens. We got some token makers. One that I really like is Ogre Slumlord. This guy's great. He's 3BB for an Ogre Rogue. Ogre Rogue. It's fun to say. He's a 3/3.
Ogrog.
Yeah, just Ogre Roger. It's almost a palindrome. Whenever another non-token creature dies, again, there's that word, non-token creature. I'm losing tons of non-token creatures. Whenever a non-token creature dies, you may put a 1/1 black rat creature token onto the battlefield. Rats you control have death touch.
How did you find this guy?
I looked for non-token creatures.
How did you evaluate him in your deck?
Oh, I think like he's in, I'm putting him in the token part of our discussion because he makes tokens, but I could have easily put him in the, like, when a creature dies part because I have a lot of creatures that are watching for non-token creatures to die and then stuff happens when they die. So, and this is another one, and I think he's great because...
Because you're cycling. You got people coming in and out, I guess.
Yeah, I got people going into the graveyard, coming out of the graveyard. I'm spawning tokens, I'm sacking tokens. I mean, non-token creatures are what Ogre Slumlord cares about. But the fact that your rats have death touch is huge. Because I think you're right. I think people are going to be mad at me for just draining everybody. So, and once they see the writing on the wall, once they see I can make people lose, like, you know... 8 life at a time just by sacking a few things and drawing a few cards, then they're going to be worried. So I want all that death touch. I mean, it's on the ground, so flyers will still get through. All of your unblockables will get through. Mm-hmm. But that's a way to deter a ton of ground damage, right? And, you know, big deal. What are you going to do? You're going to attack your big thing into my death touch rats? Sure. I'll block with my death touch rats.
Right.
Your creatures die, and I get more life loss triggers.
The reason why I ask is it seems like a powerful card that I've tried to put in several decks, and it just, it's always like the 101st card, like it's always down to the wire, and I'm like, ah, cut it.
You know what? Andy says that too, but I really feel like it does. Maybe your decks weren't sacrificing as much. I don't know.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's certainly possible.
Well, you know what? Probably true too. Like, not being a non-token creature only, that is a restriction. Because, yeah, you know, you can pump out millions of tokens, but you can only pump out non-token cards as fast as you draw them, unless you're pulling them out of the graveyard. If they'll have persist, right, if they'll have undying, if they're all just coming back over and over, reassembling skeleton, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, and that Sengir.
Sengir Nosferatu, right? Yeah, every other time. He's a token half the time, but then he turns back into the vampire card. So, like, it's gonna happen. Yeah. Oh, no, he doesn't die, though.
Oh, he just exiles. Leaves.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But anyway, no, I think he's great in this deck. He certainly does work. And let's not forget, whenever another non-token creature dies, not just yours. So, like, if other stuff dies too, you're getting rats.
Huh. That's interesting.
But Butler just read the card for the first time.
Maybe I didn't realize that. I mean, because that's good with a board wipe.
Oh, yeah, man. Someone rats the board. It's like, okay, everyone loses all the creatures. How many creatures died that are non-token? Oh, yeah. 11?
Now cool. I've got a million excellent defenders.
Although they won't have Death Touch while Ogre Slumlord's not on the battlefield.
I'm sure you got a way to get him back.
Yes, I do. I do. Cool. So let's keep going. I've got New Scraff Mob. I think I'm falling in love with this card. It's brand new from Eldritch Moon, but I love it. 4BB for a zombie. It starts as a 0/0, but it enters the battlefield with 5 +1/+1 counters on it. And whenever a player casts a spell, you remove a +1/+1 counter from New Scraff Mob. And if you do, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. Amazing. So he starts with 5 tokens. So if I cast a spell, if you cast a spell, he's eventually going to make 5 zombies. And then the base New Scraff Mob will die. So the 5 zombies plus the card itself, I'm getting 6 Vela creatures leaving the battlefield triggers off of this one card.
With a Zac outlet.
With a Zac outlet, or yeah. Like, I mean, creatures gonna die, and I got Zac outlets. I don't go into deep, you know, all the depth of how many Zac outlets.
Does your deck even want to attack, really?
I don't think it needs to. I will.
Doesn't sound like it.
I will if I can, because everything's still intimidating, right? Like, Vela still gives everyone intimidate. So if there's a green player out there, I'm just gonna be like, oh, sorry, green player. You can't block any of this, so I'm coming in. No problem. You'll see why later. It is important to stay ahead in life total, if possible, right? You know, you want to
play a dangerous game, maybe?
Playing a very dangerous game. And then the last card in the token category I want to talk about is Chasm Skulker. This dude is fantastic. This squid horror. He's 2 and a blue for a squid horror that's 1/1. But whenever you draw a card, put a +1/+1 counter on Chasm Skulker. And you'll recall all those other cards I had, Grim Haruspex or whatever. As all this stuff is happening, I'm drawing an awful lot of cards. So this guy's going to get enormous pretty easily. And when Chasm Skulker dies, you put X 1/1 blue squid creature tokens with Island Walk onto the battlefield, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Chasm Skulker.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that he basically reads, like, as long as you have a Zac outlet, which I plan to have. I plan to have lots of Zac outlets. You can just be like, okay, so what has he got? 11 counters on him? Cool. That's 12 points to everyone. Because I'll sack him and then the 11 squiddies that come to back him up.
Do you really need a Zac outlet, though? I'm sure it's nice to be able to do it on demand, but you got an 11/11 intimidate coming at you.
Yeah, that's true.
Sooner or later, you're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
I mean, if he gets exiled, that's a bummer, but...
Yeah, but I'll just sack him in response.
As long as you have a sack. Yeah.
As long as I have a sack. I got sack Ellis.
I should
have
had this guy in my deck. I didn't put him in. I didn't really look for the Island Walk or the Land Walk. There's a couple of that, but I didn't really go out of my way looking for that. And this would be a good addition to the intimidate side as well. Just to get in, because you're drawing cards like crazy in my deck too.
Yeah.
And early on. And it's a cheap card. 2 and a blue.
Cheap.
How much does it cost? You know?
This, you will see this card featured later in our top 3 expensive cards of the deck. Yeah. Yeah, great. So yeah, those are my top token makers that I wanted to highlight.
All right. Well, let's move on to my big triggers then.
Big trig?
That's the final category I've got. Once you've got your lands out, your cards drawn, you know, what do you want to do? Well, we got a couple things. We got a couple big ciphers. We got Stolen Identity, which is 4 and 2 blue. And it has cipher, which means when you cast it, once it's done casting, you can exile it encoded onto a creature that you can control. And when it deals combat damage to a player, you can cast it again without paying its mana cost. Stolen Identity is put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target artifact or creature, which is pretty good. Soul Rings again.
Artifact
again.
As well.
Yeah.
I did not read that.
I mean, maybe you don't need a Soul Ring if you're already at 6 mana, but more mana is more mana. big creatures, whatever you need.
No, man, I want a token of my Noosegraph mobs with 5 more tokens on it so I can knock them off to get more zombies.
When I was testing this, I made a copy of Battle Ball, Mirror Battlesphere.
Battle Ball!
Mirror Battlesphere, and then I made another Mirror Battlesphere, and then another one. So I had like 3 Mirror Battlespheres and like 12 mirror tokens.
Well, right, and I think... Right.
Insane.
Right. So then, because what might not be immediately obvious with Stolen Identity, with all of the encode and cipher cards, is that you cast it once from your hand in your first main phase.
Yep.
And then you encode it on someone who's going to get through in combat, and then you hit, and you get to cast it again in your damage phase of this. So you really get 2 casts out of it. So
yeah, as long as you've got a guy that's not summoning sick.
Right. Which I'm sure you
get through. Which, I mean, getting through, yeah, no problem.
That's what this deck does.
This card loves Invisible Stalker.
Oh, Hexproof. Oh, my God.
Which is 1/1 Hexproof unblockable.
Yeah, we all know Invisible Stalker, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Stolen Identity, if you think, like, 6 mana might be a lot, but if you're getting 2 from it right away, that's really like 3 mana to copy a creature. That's incredible. That's cheaper than your clone price.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on average. And if it sticks around for any amount of time, it's just gravy. Gravy, gravy.
Oh, man.
The other cipher card that's big is Undercity Plague, which is kind of like Annihilator almost. It's 4 and 2 black, and it says target player loses 1 life, discards a card, and sacrifices a permanent.
A permanent.
So sacrifice 2 permanents. Discard 2 cards, lose 2 life.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, you know, you got to work for it a little bit, but that's what this deck is trying to do. It's trying to work for that. So those are a couple of the big stuff there.
Let's not forget that Vela gives everybody Intimidate.
Yep.
So, like, unless someone's playing blue and black, you're going to have a few creatures, even if they don't have Unblockable written on them, who can probably just slip through.
Well, and it says target player, too, on the spell, so...
Oh, yeah.
So you can team up and be like, hey, man, I don't even have anything unblockable right now, but let me do 1 damage to you. I'm going to draw a card. He's going to have to sack 2 things. He's going to have to discard 2 cards. He's being a real problem right now.
Yeah, right? And I've got my Explorer Scope on him, so you know, why don't you let me attack?
I've got this big guy. You know what? I'll attack him with my big guy. I'll attack you with my little guy because we're buds.
Yeah, right? Ooh.
You know, until that guy's dead. Anyway,
we all know that all friendships go until there's 2 players left. Yeah. That's when the friendship stops.
And when the friendship stops, that's when one of the other big hitters comes out, which is Quiet as Spike.
Ooh, everybody be quiet.
Which is an equipment, and it costs 3 generic mana. And it says equipped creature has death touch. And whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, that player loses 1/2 his or her life, rounded up.
Half rounded up, yeah.
It equips for 3/2. So there's a couple effects like this. This is, I guess, the most portable of them, which is like, yeah, one guy's dead. All right, move on to the next guy. He feels like he's okay. He's at 40 life. Maybe he's gained some. He's at 45 life. He's
maybe
at 50
he's,
life.
Maybe he's Oloro and he's at 60, yeah. 70 life.
Nope, now you're at 30, 35 life.
Oof.
Next turn, nope. Now you're at 17, 18 life. You know, what? It's law of diminishing returns, so you have to have another way to follow it up, but it's a way to make somebody go from feeling real safe to, ooh, maybe I need to worry about this guy.
Well, and you just made me think, like, although we built our decks to be, like, sort of 2 rails in opposite direction, Vela still does what she does, right? Like, so in your version of the deck, if someone wraths the board, they're still going to lose a ton of points of life just from doing it, right? That doesn't disappear just because you didn't build around that part of the commander. Like, so you lose half your life, and then what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, you got 5-6 creatures out there. Somebody's at 5-6 life.
Ooh.
What are you going to do? You going to kill my creature? Try.
What are you going to do?
You're not going to kill my creature? Okay. They got intimidate.
Oh.
That you know what the deck does.
I'm not sure. At first, I was like, I like my half better. I think my half's better. But
I think
now,
your half is better, too.
Well, I don't know, because now that I hear all this stuff, I'm like, well, you know what? I think the truth is the best version is where we use both strengths of the commander. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Don't just ignore half of the card.
Yeah, right? Yeah, go figure. That's how it goes. So that's kind of like a little bit of a synopsis of the decks. What they're all about, what they're doing. You can see how that goes. You could probably just mash the cards we've mentioned together and just run with that. But let's talk about some three stars of the deck. The cards that function the best in our specific decks, in our specific builds. These are cards that, you know, are just performing above and beyond what they normally would. I'm going to start with my number three star. This is my number three star. This is Cauldron of Souls.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, right? This is an artifact. It costs 5 generic to cast, and it taps for free. There's no cost. Just tap it. Choose any number of target creatures. Each of those creatures gains persist until end of turn. As we know, I want my deck to have non-token creatures leaving, so that if any of them has persist, as long as they don't have any -1/-1 counters, and the only reason they would in my deck is if somehow they already persisted once, then they'll come back with a -1/-1 counter on it. And the beauty is, if they're already 1/1, they'll try to come back with a -1/-1 counter, and as a state-based action, they'll go right back to the graveyard, but that does count as another exit the battlefield trigger for Vela.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. It doesn't work on tokens, but like, I don't have that many tokens. This is a star for the deck for sure.
You know what I love about this card?
What's that?
Choose any number of target creatures.
Right.
Not that you can control.
Yeah, you don't have to control it. So, like, it's the ultimate, like, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please. Can you please give my guys persist? Please, I'll give you anything.
Oh, I mean, there's that. Sure, you can hold it over people. I take the tact of, oh, that guy's about to die. Would you like him to survive? I would like a favor later.
Yeah.
I will call on you for something.
Yeah. How do you feel that works out, though?
Generally good. You know me. I like to make deals.
Scott's a deal man. He's a deal man.
Whatever deals I can make to gain any amount of advantage. You know, when you got that Gwaf Hazid deck.
Yeah.
Whenever somebody says, who wants? I'm like, me.
It's true.
It doesn't matter. Like, I want whatever it is that you're selling.
It's true.
Usually I don't have to give that much away to get it because your deck is about making deals. So you're going to make a deal with somebody. So why not me?
Yeah, Scott's referring to a Gwaf Hazid brew based on an early episode of ours, like in the early teens, I think. It was a Gwaf Hazid. What was Andy's side of it? I don't remember, but the whole point of it was taking advantage of making deals with people, being able to give them stuff.
Maybe a Zedru deck or something.
Yeah. No, I think he's maybe. Anyway, but like Butler once, he just was like, yeah, I'll be your deal, pal. And I factor fictioned, and I was like, who's going to be my friend at the table? And Butler's like, I'll be your pal. I'll be make a deal. And he, like, I was expecting him to just give me, like, generous piles. Like, oh, 3 lands in one pile and 2 good spells in the other pile. But he just gave all 5 spells on one pile and 1 pile of nothing. So I'm just like, there you go. Thank you.
But now, in terms of, or in the spirit of giving good advice, that didn't really pay off for me that game. I lost.
It's
true. I think you won. I think I gave you too much.
Well, here's what happened. I mean, that may be part of it, but I also think that you felt our deal was broken when I countered your wrath because I was only trying to protect my stuff. I didn't want you to kill all my stuff.
I think we have already established that you can't be trusted.
It's true. Oh, boy. I love this game.
That's great.
Tell me you don't love this game. Why would you listen to this podcast if you don't love this game? Great. So, okay. Number 2 star of the deck. Number 2 star of the deck is a spell. It's a sorcery. It's very expensive, but it is very powerful. It's called Clone Legion. 7 blue-blue for a sorcery. For each creature target player controls, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. So, right, I'm going to basically duplicate your whole board in token form. Or myself. I could do that to myself too. But I want to highlight I have a lot of those guys that, you know, Pawn of Ulamog, they make little scions or little spawns that I can sack for extra mana. Of one of my sack outlets, I'll just give you a heads up, is Ashnod's Altar, so I can sack creatures for mana. So this card is not as hard to cast as you might think based on the top right corner. But just like so often, someone's got like 10, 12 creatures on the board, right? I'm going to grab them all. I'm going to get wicked ETB effects, and I'm going to sack all of them probably for just points of damage. That's it. This is kind of like a red card in this deck. It's just like...
just a fireball.
It's kind of like just a big fireball. I love it. Great way to close it up. And then here is the number one star of the deck, and I'll tell you why this guy's the number one star of the deck. Zulaport Cutthroat. We all remember him. He's from a Battle for Zendikar. 1 and a black for a human rogue ally, 1/1. Whenever Zulaport Cutthroat or another creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. Right?
Yep.
So like now everyone's losing 2 life whenever a creature leaves the battlefield. They have to die for Zulaport to notice. But like, and I'm gaining life. So that's the key part. So I'm also gaining life as this happens because, man, you're going to fall behind pretty quick if everyone just gangs up on you.
Oh yeah. And you got, I'm sure the other guys that do this.
I got his cohorts. Yeah. Blood Artist. Yeah. Blood Artist.
Falcon Wrath. Something.
Falcon Wrath Noble. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Eternal Masters, for bringing the price of Blood Artist way down. That it is.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't make the top 3 most expensive cards. It's not even on the list.
That's great.
It's great. It used to be, it was out of range for a while. We couldn't brew with it here on the podcast because it was over $5 for a while.
Yeah, I thought it was expensive, but it was Modern Masters that brought it back down?
Eternal Masters.
Eternal Masters.
That's great. Yeah, Eternal Masters. Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Doing work for us Commander players.
Love it. Love those sets.
All right, well, let's move on to my 3 stars.
Okay.
Man. All right, come in at number 3. I've got Shimmian Spectre. This is a flyer. I think it costs 4 mana. Well, I don't have it. I don't know what happened to it.
Did you spell it? Oh, Shimmian Spectre? Oh, I must not have put it in.
Sorry. Oh, it's all right.
I'll pull it up.
I believe it's 2 and 2 black. It has flying. Oh, look at you. There we go. Yeah, 2 and 2 black has flying. It's a 2/2. It says, whenever Shimmian Spectre deals combat damage to a player, that player reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-land card from it. Search that player's, well... for EDH, it says search that player's hand, but basically everywhere else for a card that has the same name and exile it. Then that player shuffles his or her library. So that's irrelevant, but you're just taking things out of their hand. So it's a good proactive way to deal with all the threats that this deck has maybe a little bit of trouble dealing with. I've got board wipes in here. I don't have a whole lot of counter spells or instant speed removal. It's all on creatures, you know, when they do damage or to tap them and do it. So it's a good way to proactively find your threats and eliminate them. Once you've seen somebody's hand, if they don't have something that you're worried about, find somebody else, target them, make sure they don't have the thing that cripples your deck.
Yeah, once you've made one enemy, move on and make a new enemy.
Well, you know, only if you have to, or only if you're really confident. But it does work for sure. It did a lot more than I thought it was going to do. Coming in at number 2, I've got Sword of the Animist.
Ooh, love this sword. Recent
equipment. Yeah, it's great and really good in this deck. It's 2 mana. Equipped creature gets +1/+1. Whenever equipped creature attacks, you may search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. It equips for 2. It's a little bit more expensive than Explorer's Scope, but it's way better. You don't have to worry about it being on the top. You just search it and you get it, and it's automatic, and you just ramp. It's in blue-black. You're ramping. It's great.
They told us Primeval Titan was banned in our format.
Yeah, Primeval Titan now only costs 2.
Yeah. Man, I love that sword. We don't talk about that sword enough. I don't run that sword in enough decks. It should be in any deck that wants to attack, really. Oh, at least that isn't green.
I imagine that that sword will go up in value too. Well, it's only like a buck or two right now.
And does it say non-basic or any?
It's like basic. It's basic.
Basic. Yeah. Oh darn.
Yeah, if it was non-basic too, like
then it's not quite primeval.
No, no. But I mean, it's just so good in any deck that you want to attack with.
Which, yeah.
You know, that's the whole theme of this deck. You just get land after land after land. Makes your draws better. Makes you able to cast your spells. It's perfect.
Gotta have land.
Gotta have land. Fixes. It's great. Coming in at number one, we've got my old pal, Lu Xun, the Scholar General.
Yep.
He's 2/2 blue with horsemanship. And he says, what does Lu say? He says, whenever Lu Xun, Scholar General, deals damage to an opponent, you may draw a card. Now, this is a common effect in my deck. Oh, he's also a 1/3. The stats don't really matter in this deck.
No.
It's just you want to deal damage.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much. More than zero. You know, there's a lot of effects like this in the deck, but this is the best one because it's just, he just has unblockable written right on there. Every once in a while, somebody else will have their own Lu Xun or their own other horsemanship guy, I suppose.
Will they?
Well, they might. But the important thing is that they're going to want to attack with it too. So they're not going to leave it around to block unless they really want to get in your way.
Well, there's lots of horsemanship.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. I'm sure it exists. I don't see a whole lot of it in EDH.
Oh, it's all from Portal Three Kingdoms, though, right? So, yeah. No one runs those cards. They're too expensive.
Well, Lu Xun has seen enough reprints, I guess.
That's the thing. I think they reprinted a couple of them, but I think if you're looking for the OG ones, I think you're not going to do it.
I mean, lose your man.
Lose your man.
Drawing you those cards. Combine this with, you know, a bunch of the other effects, the Deep Fathom Skulker that draws you cards at the same trigger, Mask of Riddles or Mask of Memories?
Mask of Memory.
And you just like draw, all off the same trigger. Great. You don't have to worry about sneaking him in. He's just, you put him down and you attack with him.
Yeah.
There's the whole package.
Yeah, that dude's the whole package. And he can ride a horse.
and he can ride a horse.
Cool. So were there any surprises or discoveries in your deck? Like, you know, cards that you just never heard about before? Or cards that maybe you did think about, but you're like, you know what? This is actually a very good card.
Yeah, a couple things caught me by surprise. You know, Myriad I knew about. But Myriad combined with Storionic Resonator is pretty sweet in this deck because if you've got combat triggers that you want to do, wouldn't you rather do them to everybody instead of just one person? So you get multiple combat triggers. So Myriad, for those of you that don't know, when you attack with a creature that has Myriad, it puts a copy of that creature onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking every other player.
Yeah.
So you get trigger as long as they all get through, but with Storionic Resonator, you don't copy their triggers, you copy the Myriad trigger and you get
double tokens. Ooh, I need that in this deck because they're all going to leave the battlefield at the end of turn. Ooh, Myriad. I do run the Myriad Snake. Brood Birth Viper or whatever.
Oh, the one that deals combat damage on...
the one that draws a card off combat damage? Yeah.
Yeah.
The blue one.
I got that one in there. There's also the black one causes your opponents to discard.
Yeah. If it wasn't so darn expensive, Blade of Selves would go in either of these decks very nicely.
Absolutely. Blade of Selves.
Blade of Selves.
What, 7? It's too much for this.
It's out of this podcast of language. I mean
it's kind of creeping down, isn't it?
Or is it?
I don't know. I don't know. Don't imagine that'll continue unless they reprint it. I mean, when it first came out, it was like $20 or something.
Right. I'm looking it up just because, like, we don't talk about cards that are more than $5 unless...
This deck really wants it, though.
Unless this deck really wants it, right? So, like, I mean, this is a thing where it is possible to, like, put it in. Yeah, so it's going for about $350. USD on the average website. Anyway, you know what? That's like it's out of this podcast's official range, but it's within the range of like negotiation. If you're just like if you really want to,
if you wanted to all in on that card,
and yeah, right.
The problem with this deck is that Baylor herself is a little bit pricey.
Baylor is about
she's at the top end of the podcast range.
Yes, but she's less than five. We have brewed with commanders that were like up to 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It doesn't leave you a whole lot. Well, actually, I think you remember some. Riku's up there, right?
Yeah, Riku's about 10. Mimeoplasm's pretty expensive.
Yeah, it just doesn't leave you a whole lot of room for the rest of the 99.
It's true. But as we said before, you don't need expensive cards, right? Like forever, if there's a card that you really want that's $3, you can probably find an equivalent for a gumball that's about as good.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, like so we talked about Blood Artist. Blood Artist got really expensive for a while, but then they gave us Zulaport Cutthroat, which is slightly different, but essentially the same, right? It's still very good, and it's well worth saving $6.50 to get that version of the card. It's not $6.50 better than Zulaport Cutthroat.
Oh yeah. My example of that I always like is Crux of Fate. It's like the cheapest board wipe. It's like 50 cents, 40 cents, something like that. And like every once in a while you get burned by having to choose either dragons or non-dragons.
Right.
And like a dragon will stick around or a couple dragons. But yeah, it's like, okay, that or $60 for Damnation. Well,
yeah.
I guess I'll pay the 40 cents then.
Yeah, well, and I usually go up one more mana for Life's Finale.
Yep. I mean, that I had in my deck and had to cut it for budget reasons. I mean, it's not.
Is that getting up there?
Well, no, it was only like $2, but I needed to shave a little bit off to come in under the $50 mark.
That's going up, though. That used to be $1 or less.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's a good one, man. Who cares? Our format is slow enough that you don't need to Wrath on turn 4.
Yeah. I mean, if Damnation was 40 cents, yeah, I would run it.
Yeah. But yeah, I hear you.
I just don't have the dollars for $60 Damnations in all my black deck.
No.
Sorry, what were we talking? Oh, surprises.
More, yeah.
I got another one. Bone Dancer. Bone Dancer is a 2/2 for 1 and 2 black. And I'm surprised I haven't seen this before. It is a zombie. And, well, this isn't the Oracle text. Here it is. Whatever Bone Dancer attacks and isn't blocked, you may put the top creature card of defending player's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. If you do, Bone Dancer assigns no damage this turn.
Yeah, who cares?
Like, yeah, okay, 2 damage, I'll trade that for a creature, for sure.
But it's like the top creature card of defending player's graveyard. So that means, right? Like, I'm not entirely sure how the rules of this work. Oh, did you? Okay, yeah. Maybe you can fill us in then.
It's the creature that went there most recently.
Sure.
That's how they do it now.
Okay. So, okay.
So you do have to have a little bit of a memory of what happened. And I don't know what happens in the event of a tie. Like if you milled 10 cards all at once, I imagine there would be a random element or maybe it's somebody's choice.
I imagine if you mill 10 cards, they go in order.
No, I think they're all put in at the same time unless it says mill and then mill again.
Yeah,
or
maybe.
Or mill for each of these.
Or what about a Wrath?
A Wrath is simultaneous as well.
So the person who controls the creatures gets to pick the order they go in?
I don't know. I guess I didn't look up the whole rule.
Because if you...
But
like
it's the most recent.
If you're holding the Bone Dancer and you haven't cast it yet, but you're like thinking about it, and then someone Wraths the board just before that, like you're going to have to step in and be like, which of those creatures went in last? Why are you asking? Well, you know.
Well,
I'm just asking.
You can maybe backtrack. It is an awkward card, and I get why they don't print things like these.
It's so confusing. Because like I know that like if there's a lot of weird graveyard shenanigans, I will separate my graveyard sometimes. Because if someone keeps asking me, you got any artifacts in your graveyard? I'll just separate my artifacts and put them off to the side so that they can just shut up.
Yeah. Or, I mean, people sometimes shuffle their graveyards for some reason. I don't know why they do that, but I've seen it. I mean, despite all the weirdness, though, like this card is just such a good value. It's 3 mana for a repeatable reanimator effect.
And it almost doesn't matter what you get because...
you want something good. You play against a reanimator player with this, and you are just having a great time.
Yeah.
Just like, Childred, sure, I'll take that.
Ooh.
Or whatever.
But even if you're like, I'm trying to think, I guess the only time this wouldn't be just bananas is if you're playing against like a really synergistic tribal deck, where like if you grab their like random elf, it doesn't help you much. But then just don't attack that guy.
Hold on, we're talking elves? Elves make a lot of mana. You don't want like a Findhorn elves or something? Like, I'll take that.
I guess I'll take it. Yeah, even at that. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'll take it.
It's a one mana creature, but like, I still want it. Give it.
Yeah, man. Well, and I guess that you would know which card would be the card in all graveyards.
Yep.
Like, you would know, like, what do you got on top? What do you got? Oh, cool. I'm going after you.
Also, when this card's sitting out there, unless you got a way to give him haste and you're just sandbagging him in your hand, like, there's no surprise. Like, when you ask somebody, hey, what's on the top of your graveyard, it's not like you're giving away information. They know that you have this creature. They know you're going to be attacking somebody or
yeah.
something.
Yeah. Cool. Neat. Any more other discoveries?
I get something for you. Do you have board wipes in there. Do you yes. have wipes that return all creatures to your hand, or all creatures to all of their controllers' hands?
I don't have that. See, I should have that.
Yes, you should. And I didn't even realize that until I was playtesting, and you know, my opponents were down to a real low life total, but my board state was kind of fallen behind, and I cast Devastation Tide, which is a miracle card that costs 3 and 2 blue, I think, that returns all the creatures to their owner's hand.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll just do a reset, and then I can get my cheap creatures back out and attack them quickly and finish them off for the last 5-6 points of damage, something like that. And I didn't even have to do that, because when all the creatures went away, it just went ping, ping, ping off of Vela's triggers and just killed them.
Wow.
So your deck for sure should be taking advantage of that.
Yeah, I do run Twilight's Call. That's probably a discovery too. I'll slip that into this category. I wasn't planning on it, but bonus. 4BB for a sorcery. You may play Twilight's Call anytime you could play an instant if you pay 2 colorless more or 2 generic more to play it. Again, remember Clone Legion? Nice. Having a bunch of mana is not that hard to do. But then each player returns all creature cards from his or her graveyard to play. So someone might benefit from this way more than you, but I guess I figure, like, if you've got a ton of sack out, a ton of creatures, a ton of tokens, I've got Ashnod's Altar out, I'm going to sack, get a bunch of creatures, get a bunch of mana going. I've sacked 15 or 16 creatures. Everybody come back out to play. Let's do that all over again. Sack.
So it's like a poor man's Rise of the Dark Realms.
Yeah.
Still good, right?
Commander is the best. You don't need to spend $5 on a card. Spend a gumball on this one.
I like it. What else did you find?
Those are my big finds. I guess I also wanted to talk about Singer Nosferatu. I've never heard of him before. It's like, it's interesting to think about that. It's like the preliminary transform card before we had transform, because he's transforming into a bat, and I think it's a cool way to do it. But it's just like, you have to. It's a bit awkward. You exile him, get that token back. But this is. Maybe the very first transform card. Yeah. Oh, and it is from Future Sight or Time Spiral. So that's when they did like deal with like futuristic things. Cool.
Maybe they were foreshadowing even flip cards. No, not flip cards. Transform cards.
Yeah. Cool. Flip
card is different. Oh, sorry. I forgot one thing that we were talking about before that I discovered, which was Night Dealings.
Oh, yeah. I wanted you to talk about Night Dealings. Yeah. Is my favorite of your discoveries.
Night Dealings is a cool card. It's an enchantment. It's 2 and 2 black. Here's what it says. It says, whenever a source you control deals damage to another player, you know, we're going to be doing that, put that many theft counters on Night Dealings. Theft counters. Cool. And then it has 2 and 2 black. Remove X theft counters from Night Dealings. Search your library for a non-land card with converted mana cost X. Reveal it and put it into your hand. Then shuffle your library. So it's just a repeatable tutor as long as you're doing combat damage.
Yeah.
Diabolic tutor? Diabolic tutor. The demonic tutor. What's the one?
Two the and cheap two one? Black. Yeah, 2 and 2 black one. Is diabolic. Diabolic tutor, yeah. Yes.
Man, I can never keep my tutor straight. The only conditions, you got to be able to do combat damage to get those counters going on there.
Oh, it does. No, it doesn't say combat damage. It just says damage. Fair enough. When Vila has a bunch of creatures leave, this thing's racking up points.
I'm not even paying attention to that because I'm just tunnel vision here. But yeah, no, that makes this card a lot more useful in other decks, actually, the fact that it's not combat damage.
Yeah, any damage.
That's great.
You're getting theft counters, right? So it's a diabolic tutor for X. Remove X counters, right?
You don't have to pay X.
No, right, correct.
You just remove X counters. You just have to have the counters there. So if you've done a bunch of damage over the course of the game, you can get something huge. But it's a testament to the power of Sol Ring. We were talking about this before, that when I was playing with this, the first card I always wanted to get was just Sol Ring. Who cares? I got to pay 4 mana for it. It's just like, whatever. Let's just get it out. Then I've got 2 more mana. I can do more with it later. Just like boom, boom, boom. Let's get it.
Oh, man. So once again, I have fallen victim to the I want to build this deck syndrome. I think in the end, if I were to do this, I would combine our decks together. I guess the trick is just like, where do you draw the line? How much like recursion creatures do you leave in versus like unblockable creatures? Like, if there's any unblockable creatures with persist, man, that's where it's at. That's what I'd do.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you put any creatures with ninjutsu in?
I did not.
I did. I had a lot in at the start, and then I pulled it back because they're not necessarily as good. But they are. There's some good ones out there.
There really is.
And that you can surprise some people. You know, you just throw in the guy that that basically is a Necrotal on combat damage.
Yes.
He's good.
The ninjutsu says that like when a creature is unblocked, you get to swap them for a creature in your hand, right?
And usually it's for a lower amount of mana too. So for like one in blue or two in a black or something like that, you swap one in your hand, the one with ninjutsu in your hand, put him out, he's tapped and attacking, and it's already past the declare blockers stage. So he's going to damage. He's going to get the trigger that's on that card and whatever other triggers you got going. And you've already got the leaves the battlefield trigger from the card that you've returned to your hand. And then you can recast him.
Crazy.
It seems to be pretty good for like the combo deck. Because I was leaning one way, I only put the better ninjutsu.
Sure. But again, those are creatures leaving the battlefield. Vela's doing points of damage.
True.
Yeah. Right? Man. Okay. Great. Cool. Very cool stuff, Butler. You've brought a lot of cool ideas to this. I think I want to combine our decks and just make like a super brew of the both of ours. That might be a fun thing to do. But like, before we get to the budget report, I want to talk a bit about our sponsor, Wizard's Tower, wizardtower.com. If you are anywhere near the Ottawa, Canada area, they've got a $2,000 Open Championship coming up. It's going to happen on Saturday, August the 20th. They're going to give out $2,000 cash after the top 8. You're going to qualify for their Invitational Championship. That's just some regular local events, but as always, you can always buy cards from their website, American or Canadian. They'll ship them for free if you spend $15 or more, 10 in the U.S. Again, we've made this argument before. The Canadian dollar just took another dive.
Oh, did it?
It did.
I've been reading the news.
So, you know, all you American listeners, it's probably worth checking out the prices on the Canadian side and then doing a little conversion in your own little conversion tool browser just to see. Because you might be getting a sick deal even if you have to pay for shipping beyond that. Just putting that out there. Just check it out. In the past, people have tweeted that has been a great deal. And may I also mention, may I take this moment to say that we are now, the Commander's Brew has some presence on mtgcanada.com for articles. My latest article about wrath effects is up there now, so please check it out. It's called Don't Wrath Me, Bro. It's about not getting wrathed. But check out Wizard's Tower, wizardtower.com. Use our coupon code TOWEROFBREWS. But let's get back to money. Let's get back to the budget report. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that happened. Great. So here is where we take all of the cards. We throw them sideways so that nobody sees them coming, so they're unblockable, and we poke out a bunch of eyes. And the ones that didn't poke out eyes, we put on the budget report.
I like that. That's one of your more sensible ones, I think.
Thank you, Scott.
makes some amount of sense to me.
If you're listening, Andy, Scott likes my simile. Is it a simile? Is it a metaphor?
Did you use like or as? If you did not, then it's a metaphor, I believe.
I don't know what it is.
I mean, I might be shortcutting the rules there. I think it's a metaphor.
English majors, let me know. But in the meantime, here's what the decks cost. My deck, Veil of the Nightclad, focusing on creatures leaving the battlefield to seal the deal, comes in at $48.21. The most expensive card, you know what I hinted at earlier as we are breaking the rules. The most expensive card is Cauldron of Souls, the one that gives any number of creatures persist. It costs $6. That is over our official budget, but I'm telling you, I think it deserves a spot in the deck. I think we got to keep it in because we've talked about how useful it is to bring creatures back if you're sacrificing them voluntarily. You get double sacrifice out of them. But let's not forget, you can fully come back from a wrath. And if you really want to punish someone, like if someone decides to foolishly cast a wrath effect while you have Cauldron of Souls, you can just be like, hey, everybody else, do we all want our creatures back but this guy who cast that wrath? Yes? Okay, then. Probably not the smartest strategic move, but man.
I mean, I'd do it.
Just for the meanness?
Just for the mean. I mean, you make some partners there, too. Maybe open up a window for you to get in. You know, maybe you get the other guys to kill the guy, the wrath.
The guy with no creatures?
You kill them afterwards because they're all tapped out.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's probably a maybe. Bit of magical Christmas land. Magical Christmas land there, but...
we'll see.
Maybe.
Maybe. I say keep it in, right? The deck's still under 50. Let's keep it in. Chasm Skulker, that's a $3 card. No, it's $3.50. That Chasm Skulker is, what's that, 14 gumballs. That's the creature that gets bigger for every card you draw, and it just turns into a million little squiddies when it dies. Keep it. I think you got to keep it. It can close out games if you have a Psycho Lit. And then I want to put in Ophiomancer. This is a creature that did not come up yet in our discussions. But for those of you who don't know, Ophiomancer is a... For 2 and a black, you get a human shaman. It's a 2/2. At the beginning of each upkeep, if you control no snakes, put a 1/1 black snake creature token with death touch on the battlefield. Like the rat, ogre, slumlord, having death touch is useful. And it's during each upkeep, so I can sacrifice a creature before, like on every end step, for some kind of value, and then I'll get a new snake every upkeep. Very useful. I think we keep it in. I mean, so all told, like that card's $2. So all told, all these cards on our budget report here, total, doing some math in my head, and it's taking me a long time because I'm slow, about $12. You can cut all these three cards I've mentioned and save $12 off the deck. I think it's still going to be a fun and just a really fun deck to do. You know, cut 12 off, you're looking at like a $30, $35 deck. That's a pretty good deal. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to want that Cauldron of Souls, though.
Okay, so a $42 deck.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you want the Ophiomancer, too.
Okay, $46. Okay, we're back at the full price. Okay, okay. Butler, what are your cards?
All right. I'm going to start at the bottom. We got Quiet a Spike. We talked about that before. That comes in at $3.56. It's expensive, but you know, we got a lot of small creatures in this deck. I think it's worth it to just have a way to do a real large amount of damage. I mean, we got to kill your guys, kill your opponent somehow, and that's a good way to do it. So I think it stays in. Number two, we've got Ink Eyes, Servant of Oni. This is a ninjutsu card. This one, it's good. Like, it's just a solid card. I don't know that the deck absolutely needs it. It's got ninjutsu, and it deals... When it deals combat damage, you may put target creature card from the player's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control.
Ooh, that's a sexy ability.
It is a good ability, but it is a 6-mana card. But to make that a little bit better, it's got one and a black regenerate. So, like, it's just got good value on it.
What's his stats?
It's a 5/4.
Even if it's not unblockable, a lot of people aren't going to want to block that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, usually you want to sneak him in the first time, too, anyway. So he's going to be unblockable. You ninjutsu him in, and then you get that surprise value.
If
you even need to.
There are some boards where...
It's like quasi-haste, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's the key. That's the haste key, the surprise. Ooh, I love it.
But, yeah, it's just a good card, and it's not necessarily, like, absolutely crucial to the deck. So if you want to shave $3.99 off the deck, you can maybe do without that.
Oh, I'll shave $4 off, no problem.
Yeah. And then the number one most expensive card is Aashling the Extinguisher, coming in at $4.51. Aashling is great. It has a combat trigger. When it deals combat damage, you can choose a target creature that player controls, and that, I think, it forces them to sacrifice it. Yeah. So you choose a creature, you don't target it.
Yeah.
So you can get rid of anything, pretty much.
I hadn't doesn't put matter that if together.
It's indestructible. That's why it's a $4.51, is because it's like, basically, I'm choosing this card but not targeting it. Now it must die.
You have to sacrifice it. That's like, I feel like that's breaking the rules.
Yeah, probably. But we like cards that break the rules.
We do. Keep or cut?
I think it's a keep.
Keep. It's a keep.
It's in tune with the deck, and it's just so useful.
So here's the thing. We've alluded to the fact that you're probably going to want to mash these two decks together and just run like a version that's in between the two of them. You could probably cut the 6 cards that came up on our top list, and you have plenty of excellent cards left over to just mash together to come up with 99.
That's true.
You can probably do a decent 99 for this for like, what are we?
I would probably still say under 50.
You probably cut $20 off of that and probably do it for 30.
Oh.
Like I'm saying, if you mash our decks together and just like cherry pick your top 50, my top 50, and then cut these top 6 expensive ones, and then just add 6 more good cards. There's lots of good cards. That's the thing, because like, we're not relying on it. None of these effects are so unique that you can't duplicate them. It's like, yeah, like that's great. That's fun to like pull creatures out of graveyards, but like, we'll do it without. I want to say that you can check out My Brew or Butler's Brew on tappedout.net/user/commandersbrew. You can always find those there. We love getting tweets for suggestions and that kind of thing. If you want to send us an email, go to commandersbrew@gmail.com or Twitter, if I didn't mention, is @commandersbrew. I individually am @SeanTaberas. Butler is still... Are you still an egg on Twitter?
No. I'm pretty sure... After our last episode here, where I was on, I did put a picture on.
He's no longer an egg, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm still not very active, but you can reach me at Awesome Whiskey, whiskey spelled K-E-Y. Yeah, I've got my email set up to notify me when I get a tweet, so I will get back to you.
Okay, great.
I'm just not the most active tweeter out there.
That's fair. It is what it is. Oh my God, the business gets longer and longer. And then, of course, our Patreon, right? I mean, a lot of what we do would not be possible without our generous patrons. Can I say that Butler here is a generous patron as well?
It's true.
Yeah. We got some coasters coming your way, too.
Well, I
got
to say, after sitting here and doing Andy's job, it's a lot of work you guys do every week. Like, it's fun, don't get me wrong, but like, I was shocked. I thought, yeah, you know, breeze through, make a deck, no problem. But you guys do this week in, week out. I got to give you respect for that, for sure.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but as always, just your giving us your ears is thanks enough. So, I mean, if you want to go past that on the Patreon, by all means. But like, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back next week. But as always, we'll have a commander interview after the break. Thanks, guys. Bye.
See ya. All right, well, Andy's off on his honeymoon, and Sean couldn't be here. He's taking some sheep shearing lessons. So it looks like I've got my run of the mix here. Now, usually they do a commander interview, but let's see. What could I do? That sounds not so much fun. Well, how about I interview my good friend, the Soul Ring?
Hey. Yeah, it's
how you doing?
Fine. I don't usually get a lot of phone calls. It's weird getting a phone call to do an interview. I'm a colorless artifact, right?
Yep, of course. Who doesn't know that?
I'm just a circle.
That you are. I thought you'd sound a little bit brighter, though. You know, you say you got a...
Because my name is Saul. Because, well, like, Saul meaning the sun.
Yeah.
No. It's like the name Saul.
Oh, like...
Like... I can't think of a famous Saul right now, but, like, you know, a lot of old men are called Saul.
Yeah. Better Call Saul.
Oh, Better Call Saul, yeah.
Is that about you?
No, it's about the character called Saul, but, like, I like to pretend it's about me. I really should watch that show. I liked Breaking Bad a lot.
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't finish that. I only watched all of the episodes except for the last two.
Very bizarre thing to do.
Yeah, I'm not really proud of it.
Like... You're almost done.
I should probably finish,
you
right?
You should probably finish.
Did you like it?
You know, I thought the last season left a little bit to be desired. Sure.
Not enough Saul for you?
Not enough Saul. Not enough Saul.
I can
Saul.
Understand that.
Yeah. I like Saul Ring. Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's nice to get out. It's nice to get out of the deck once in a while, you know?
Yeah, explore the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's great.
Let me ask you this. You know, what's it like being the most common, most important part of everyone's commander deck?
Well, I gotta say, a lot of people say I'm the best card in commander. You know what? And I'm not going to disagree with them, but I do a lot of work to keep myself grounded.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah? What do you do?
I meditate.
Oh, you mean...
I meditate. I like...
Do you have a mantra?
Yeah. The letter O.
I see, yeah.
You know, because...
Like a ring.
Like a ring. Sometimes, you know, I just try to, like, lie down and, you know, around something that's just the right size. You know, it's always satisfying to lie down on something that's just the right size.
How big are you, would you say?
Oh, good question. Good question. Yeah.
Like a ring for a finger?
Oh, no. I'm
much bigger.
Yeah, much bigger. You can't tell because we're on Skype. This is a Skype interview right now, but I'm actually two stories tall.
Two stories?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
One mana, two stories.
Well, yeah, it costs one mana to make it, you know. But then, like, I can generate two generic mana, two colorless mana now. That was weird. That was a tough thing. I had to get new business cards when they changed it to those two diamonds.
Oh, yeah. Did your profits go way down or what?
Well, I had to... being the most popular card, you know, money is no problem. Like, okay. I've got a lot of...
Oh, you're doing fine, are you?
I'm doing real good. I got a lot of sponsorship deals. I'm sponsored by... Onion rings. Onion rings is
just
a big spot.
Just onion rings. Just the food onion rings.
The NBA sponsors me.
Wow, that's a good one.
Right? You know, the hoop. Like,
oh, yeah. Yep, for sure.
Sometimes I go down to games and they'll give a fan like a chance to throw a basketball through me from the half court line.
Do they do like one of those novelty inflatable like giant balls?
Yeah. The ball is...
You're two stories.
You're right. It has to be challenging, otherwise they give away that $500,000. But yeah, so it is a giant beach ball.
Is that what you're doing this Saturday?
Yeah, that's why
I'm... Check you out at Madison Square Gardens?
Yeah, Madison Square Gardens. Check me out. I'm doing a lot. It's great. But, you know, I think it's important to come by and support local podcasts and, you know, small operations.
Well, I'm sure Andy and Sean appreciate it.
I'm sure they did. Wait. You're not Andy or Sean?
Did we not cover this? No.
I thought I was on Commander's Brew.
Well,
I mean,
you kind of are.
Kind of?
Well, you will be, as long as they don't know about it. We're going to sneak you in the back door.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know all about sneaking in through holes. Too much?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe a little. Dial it back, Soul Ring. Dial it back.
All right, sorry.
You're good. Just, you know, keep it peachy.
Sure.